Senator Lori, welcome to the Tax Committee, Senate File 1189. And members, we don't have a revenue or a fiscal note on this yet. The department has said it's forthcoming.
Good, yes, I realize there is no fiscal note. Sorry about that. We hope to have one very soon, and we can talk a little bit about estimates that we've. I'll let Niles cover that when he talks. But this is a bill for a sales tax exemption. It's brought to us by fire chiefs and fire departments. It covers all fire departments in the state, and it's largely a rural benefit because the rurals have such small budgets, and equipment purchases like this really put a pinch on them. It's applies to all property used directly in providing response and training, emergency response and training for our fire departments. And it would cover things like replacement hoses and axes. Currently, when you buy equipment in conjunction with a truck, the whole package is exempt from sales taxes. But if you go to replace some of that equipment, when you get it replaced, it's hit with sales taxes. This would just cover all of it. And then also it would expand to cover off-road vehicles used for such response and training. And as you know, in our rural areas, when the departments have to get out into swamps and out onto lakes, there's some off-road equipment is very handy. I know our local has used some of the stuff they've had many times. So I'll keep it brief and leave it at that and let Niles maybe explain a little bit more, and then we'll stand for questions.
Mr. Chairman, members, Niles Zickman representing the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs and the Minnesota State Fire Department Association. This is an initiative that's actually been on our agenda for the past couple years. As we develop our legislative agenda, we survey our membership, which is predominantly volunteer. Of the 20,000 firefighters in the state, 18,000 are volunteer. And this had been an issue lingering for some time in two parts. One, to help minimize some of the confusion as they go to replace those hoses, axes, fans, chainsaws. After they wear out, they have to pay tax, where if they buy them with the truck, they don't. And then for those auxiliary units, the snowmobiles, the boats, the ATVs, it's a major purchase, especially for a rural department, and another $500 or $600, $1,000 in tax can go a long way in some of those $20,000 and $30,000 budgets to help offset their training. The Department of Revenue worked with us all through the interim in the summer, had me do some survey in various populations. So we did small departments, population-based, medium, and large, and we'd worked with Tom Ellerby, and we'd sent that off to him. He had indicated in an email to me, this is very rough, somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 a year, or maybe $125,000, so $250,000 a biennium, but we're as eager to see that fiscal note, you know, as you are also. But those are just based on a survey of about 25, 30 departments we did through the summer. So we're hopeful, you know, that comes back in and some pretty modest impacts. With that, I'll thank you.
Questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Zickman. Without objection, the chair lays over Senate File 1189 for possible inclusion. Mr. Zickman, it'll just depend on what the fiscal note comes in at.
Thank you, members, and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Members, we have two bills that the Environment Committee has asked to see. So Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 1173 and Senate File 1937 be taken from the table. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Senator Larson moves that Senate File 1173 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Skoy moves Senate File 1937 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, is that Environment Finance or Environment?
Environment Policy.
Policy. Okay.
Senate File 1933, a public finance bill. And my thought here, members, is we'll walk through the bill and see where members have some objections to pieces, and then we'll include the non-controversial items into a public finance article in the tax bill, and then we also will have the bill still sitting here in the event we need some kind of a vehicle for something to run it out on its own in case our tax bill fails the governor's test. so we can still have an opportunity to get this done. So, Ms. Haney, welcome to the Tax Committee, Senate File 1933.
Thank you, Senator Bach. My name is Kathy Haney, and I'm a lawyer at Fagery & Benson, and we represent the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance. And I'll let Barbara Portwood introduce herself, and she's going to walk you through the bill.
I'm Barbara Portwood with Leonard Street & Dinard, and I'm this year the president of the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance. As I'm sure you're aware from earlier years, our objective is not necessarily to sway you on policy issues, but rather to try to clean up the financing statutes and make things work better. So that's what our sections of this bill are intended to do. Section 1 is a technical provision. Right now, in terms of the investment of public funds, anything over $100,000, which is insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance, is required to be collateralized. There's an odd difference between a couple of the sections, and one of the sections says you have to collateralize anything over the face amount of the investment. The other says you have to collateralize the investment and accrued interest. This would provide that you only collateralize your accrued interest once you actually have it in the account. Section 2, school district equipment certificates of indebtedness and capital notes. This section, together with sections 9 and 11, are intended to make the requirements for capital notes issued by different issuers consistent. In 2005, the maximum term for capital notes issued by cities and counties was extended from 5 to 10 years. This section would do the same thing for school districts. Section 3, mail number of questions. This section removes a limitation on the number of questions that can be submitted to voters in a special election conducted by mail. Excuse me, the statute currently limits the number of questions to 2, and cities and school districts often need to have more than 2 questions.
What? Why at a mail election? Why at a mail election?
The statute provides that as an alternative way to provide a special election. It's generally done at a time when there isn't going to be a general election. It's less expensive.
Members, I think if we put that into the tax bill, Senator Rest is probably likely to want to see the tax bill. Senator Pogomiller?
I'd move not to incorporate that.
Senator Pogomiller is not to incorporate Section 3. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Section 3 is out.
Section 4, as a published notice, a lot of statutes require specific notice for public hearings or other events. This is a general statute that says if there isn't something special in a different statute, you can't have a publication more than 14 days before a public hearing. This would move that timing so that you could have notice as long as 30 days before the public hearing. Section 5 is towns and subordinate service districts. Cities, towns, and counties, as you know, can create special service districts or subordinate service districts. There's 2 names for essentially the same function that provide enhanced services or facilities within certain areas and then tax only those areas. The objective of sections 5 through 8 is to conform the procedure for town subordinate service districts and the issuance of bonds for subordinate service districts to the similar provisions that now exist for city special service districts. Section 5 specifically is a technical amendment which just creates a defined term for special services and then uses that. It's not a substantive change. Section 6 authorizes a town board to initiate the establishment of a special service district by resolution in addition to the existing petition method. It requires that the resolution and notice of public hearing specify the proposed special services to be provided in the boundaries of the district.
So 7 is the one that includes residential.
And that the notice be published once in a newspaper of general circulation at least 14 days before the date of the public hearing.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I wonder if the same question can be asked of these sections, if this propels this bill into Senator Rest's committee to deal with local government operations.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
By taking out the mail ballot, You're taking the questions away from the voters, aren't you? No?
It's not changing the law. It's not changing the law.
It's not changing the law. It was an addition.
Right. Okay. Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelman.
Senator Dibble, these are typically dealt with in the statutes in the tax committee, these sub-districts.
Okay.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at the subdivision 2, the public hearing portion, lines 11 and 12. You're now including here that the notice can be 14 days, and in section 4, we just changed the 14 days to 30 days. I'm wondering why we need section 4 if we're just going to now, whenever there's a public hearing, allow them to do it 14 days.
The section 4 is a provision that says if another statute doesn't have a specific provision for the number of days, this is the general rule. So the section 4 of the published notice, not more than 14 days before the public hearing, is a catch-all for sections that don't have a specific number of days.
And, Mr. Chair, why would we move in section 4 to extend this? I would think that the internet and the web and all of this, that notice is easier to get out, and the issue with weekly papers becomes less important. Why are we shortening the They're lengthening the notice time.
One of the issues is this is just the date when the last notice can be published. And one of the issues is for federal tax purposes, notice for certain types of bonds has to be published at least 14 days in advance. And you have a lot of jurisdictions where there's a county newspaper and it's only published once a week. So you try to get close to that 14 days, but it's often longer than 14 days.
Well, Mr. Chair, now we're going to go to where it shall not be, more than 30 days. I said it. Okay, I got it, and not less.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could just comment on the township language, that came from one of our members from the Freiberger firm in Duluth, who works very closely with numerous townships, and I was looking around. It was reviewed, I know, by the Township Association, and from their perspective, they were comfortable with it.
Well, that was, yeah, that's why I asked that.
Okay.
Ms. Honey, are we in Section 7? Getting to Section 7. Next.
We were just getting to Section 7. I hadn't explained that yet. Section 7 provides that if property tax will finance the subordinate service district, then the town board is required to include in its annual budget a levy on all the property within the district boundaries, rather than a property tax levy on the property only the users of the service as provided in current law.
Why would we want to do that?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
She should, when you're thinking about your answer to that, think about how we're going to deal with watershed districts that use viewers to determine doesn't apply, am I seeing? Okay.
I suspect that it's a credit issue in terms of being able to actually sell the bonds. This provision came from one of our members. I'm sorry, I'm not terribly familiar with the process.
So are the rest of these pieces okay?
Yeah, they're
the bonds.
More.
It's just subdivision one.
Maybe just this line. Yeah, right.
I'm uncomfortable with line 4.25 and extending that property tax levy to people who aren't in the district. Senator Larson moves to delete line 4.25 in section 7. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. So what are we doing in subdivision 2 and 3?
I'm sorry. This also provides authority for the issuance of town revenue and general obligation bonds in an amount deemed necessary to defray the cost of capital improvements necessary to operate the town subordinate special service district and to provide the special services therein.
I think,
These changes are intended to make a town's powers in a special subordinate service district parallel to the powers of a city or a county in such districts. Section 8 provides that when obligations have been issued, any rates, charges, and tax levies shall continue until the bonds and any refunding bonds have been paid in full, notwithstanding a property owner petition requesting the removal of the district. And Section 9 moves on to county capital notes. This removes the sunset of a county's authority to issue capital notes for software.
And how many years did we give them that authority?
Well, the current sunset is July 1, 2007. This would just remove the sunset altogether.
And it was, but how many years have we authorized capital notes for software?
Joanne and I are looking at each other. Senator Pogemiller maybe could tell us better. I think we had two different sunsets is my recollection. So I would speculate maybe 6-7 years, John, do you think?
Mr. Chairman, I'm somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 and up, and I think there were some authorizations that weren't really clear that might have preceded that, and so the committee over the years has kind of refined what is treated as computer software. But there had always been a sunset that kept being advanced by a couple of years.
Are members okay with making this permanent? Apparently it's been working. There hasn't been people marching in the streets.
Complaining about the software. I think you probably appreciate it when their water bills are more
the
mechanized.
The fact that they're buying new every year or something.
They'll be marching if we do the provision on page 8.
Okay. I don't think, if you're talking about section 14,
Section 11.
Okay. Go ahead. Section 10.
County capital notes, section 9, it removes the sunset on the county. I'm sorry. That's what I just said. I'm sorry. Section 10, county subordinate service districts. This provides authority for the issuance of county revenue and general obligations in an amount necessary to defray the costs of capital improvements necessary to operate a county subordinate services district and provide the special services therein. It also provides that where obligations have been issued, rates, charges, and tax levies will continue until the bonds and any refunding bonds have been retired, notwithstanding withdrawal or removal of the district by election or county resolution. This, again, is similar to the provision regarding townships. It's intended to make these special service district and subordinate service district provisions consistent for different levels of issuers. Section 11, Hennepin County Certificates of Indebtedness, it increases the maximum maturity of certificates or notes issued by Hennepin County for capital equipment from 5 years to 10 years. To conform to the change which was made for other counties in 2005. It provides that equipment includes computer hardware and software, which is also consistent with the definition applicable to counties generally.
Senator Pogemiller.
I'm confused here. Whether bundled with machinery or equipment or unbundled, I think we don't want the or unbundled.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, that's the language that had been developed over the years, and that's consistent with what's in the other existing laws.
Or unbundled?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dibble.
I'm just guessing. I'm not familiar with the prior discussions on this, but I think, you know, sometimes you buy particular hardware and only a particular software can be used to run it, but it doesn't come as a package deal. So that's unbundled, and so it doesn't do you a lot of good to buy the hardware without buying the software, and if you can't bond for it, you got to pay cash for it.
Is this, Mr.
Senator Pogomar?
Council, is this still modified by a useful life somewhere, somehow?
Mr. Chair, the other provisions, not the computer software provisions as I recall, but the other capital equipment that's authorized to be purchased under these notes is limited to the useful life. I don't know that the useful life applies to the software provision.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogomar.
The concern here has always been that you get into these contracts and there's always software updates, and that you've figured out a way then to avoid the typical debt requirements because you just keep using a vendor. The or unbundled. So that is the language we agreed to ultimately.
Yes.
Okay. If that's the boilerplate language, Mr. Chairman, it's probably okay. We talked about this a lot in the last couple of years.
To the extent that you're issuing tax-exempt bonds, irrespective of the provisions of the statute, you generally make the notes no longer than the useful life of the thing that's financed.
Okay.
Section 12, Charter City Capital Notes. This removes the sunset of a charter city's authority to issue capital notes for software. Current sunset is July 1, 2007. Section 13 does precisely the same thing for statutory cities. Section 14 adds residential property to the types of property that may be included in city special service districts. The objective is to permit the creation and financing of mixed-use projects that include residential as well as commercial and retail properties. So if you have housing above retail, then you can create a special service district and include both uses within the district.
Senator Pogomar.
But this allows charges against the residential properties now.
Correct.
I would move that we do not do Section 14.
Could I just one comment, though, first?
Senator Hassani. Hassani.
Just to remind the committee, there are in current law for special service districts, whether it's current commercial properties that are allowed to be in them, or if you included residential, there are quite a few provisions for voter approval, reverse referendum kinds of things where you do have the opportunity, whether you, and even maybe more so with a resident because there's more of them, in terms of not approving it. So I just want to make it clear that we're not changing those provisions and protections in current law by adding the residential use.
Senator Pogomar moves delete Section 14.
Mr. Chairman, if I just might, I think the difference here is that when we first did special service districts years ago, there was a concern that you were setting up you were moving away from the general levies of the whole city to do something, police protection or whatever. To the extent that if you now include residential, then you've really done that. And you've just said we're going to pick particular neighborhoods and have a different tax levy for that neighborhood. So I think this goes a little too far.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pogomar, the whole idea of these districts is something I don't care for, but I realize somebody led us down this path. Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I like these districts. I was tuned out for just a second, got distracted, but I think I heard the rationale is that in those instances where there's mixed-use development, which is becoming more common and highly desirable in the urban area, where you've got residential mixed in with commercial, all kind of condominiumized in the in the same building, you got uptown, you got downtown, doing a lot of that. I understand the point that Senator Pogomiller made, but I'm wondering if there's a way to better describe those mixed-use districts so that, we can encourage more residential use in places that we've traditionally thought of as business districts so that we get...
Senator Pogomiller.
Mr. Chairman, they can still put special service districts there. The issue here is who gets
supposed to pay.
The tax or the fee imposed on them.
Okay.
And if you include residential, then you've basically allowed setting up. This was originally intended to do downtown Nicollet Mall area.
Right.
I think there might be one on Lake Street now, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But it was intended to provide extra police protection or street sweeping services for a commercial area.
Mm-hmm.
If you put residential in here, then you could basically make one neighborhood, let's say Kenwood,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Special service district, and they could have better police protection than others, perhaps.
You will see more of these if this language goes into law.
Bear Path in Minneapolis, Mr. Chair. That's what we're going to... Yeah. No, I understand your point. I don't want any gated communities or special treatment.
On the poll owner motion to delete section 14. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
And, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, or the riverfront. I don't want to pick on the
riverfront. Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Or the riverfront.
I mean, if the issue really is these mixed use, you know, highly commercialized but residential woven in, I would ask those who brought the language forward to maybe figure out a way to better describe that.
If that's the intent, then we could have better language.
Mr. Chairman,
they
can put a district in those mixed use now. This issue is just about who gets the fee or tax imposed on it. Nothing prevents you from creating a special service district in an area with mixed use, I don't think.
Chairman Bach and Senator Pogemiller, I'd have to go back and look at the law, but I think there is a threshold requirement that if you have more than X percent of residential in a commercial building, or you have to have a threshold of commercial, and I think that is probably the problem, but it's been maybe a couple years since I've visited the law, and I'm sure there is a better way to describe it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Since we're having this conversation, I'd like to go back to page 3 where you're talking about the definition of special services. I guess I might be misunderstanding this, but I understand what a service district did, but this special services is a governmental service. Does that mean like a courthouse, a workforce development center? Can you be more specific what a governmental service district is?
The statute is currently not specific, and I think if you look at Subdivision 1, all we've really done here is create a definition out of what special service districts currently are under state law. So Subdivision 1 talks about a defined area within the town in which one or more governmental services or additions to townwide services are provided specifically for the area, and that's all we've tried to do here. The statute generally permits any service that a township or county or city currently provides can be provided at enhanced level within a special district.
At enhanced level in the special service district.
And then that district is taxed for that.
So then, Mr. Chair, is this bill just about bonding for those?
Well, there's definitional changes also.
And the financing of those? There's definitional changes, but is it enhancing their ability to bond?
Senator Johnson, it enhances the township's ability to choose issuing debt for it, the ability to issue debt, for example, for cities for special service district is one option they have, and they're not required to issue debt. But a special service district is a mechanism by which an area can then choose to pay for extra services.
So then, Mr. Chair, if we're enhancing their ability to do it, we're also giving the taxpayers potentially more taxes.
That's why there are reverse referendum provisions in connection with the creation of these districts.
Well,
Senator Dibble.
And if, I think beyond reverse referendum, isn't there a mechanism to petition into? I mean, there has to be a threshold to establish the special services district proactively by the property owners, like 75%.
Senator Dibble, I don't remember the percentage. I'm sure you're probably right, but you absolutely do have to petition into it, and then there's a veto power. There's there's a couple of layers and a couple of timeline triggers as to when the property owners have a right to protest.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Hani, not to jump way ahead into the bill, but on the last page we're providing for street reconstruction financing. Will that come under all the same reverse referendum and petition and all that?
It's a separate thing.
Oh, the Section 18 is really just a technical amendment. It's not intended to. The statute currently says that you can use bond proceeds to reconstruct streets, and the plan has to describe the streets that are to be reconstructed. And the issue is often municipalities will reconstruct a street in 1 year and intend to do a couple more in the following years and issue bonds in the second year. And so the only change here is intended to provide that if you're going to do street reconstruction bonds, you can count not only the street reconstruction you're about to do, but the street reconstruction you have done in the previous year.
Mm-hmm. Section 15?
Oh, Section 15 isn't ours.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Oxley. I'm a representative of the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. What Section 15 does basically is conforms the Minnesota Gas Agency law to that governing municipal power agencies, allowing out-of-state cities to participate in bonding and things of that nature with a municipal gas agency. That's what it does. And it's 453.52, that governs the municipal power agencies. This would be 453.02, subdivision 3, amending that section. Any questions?
Question, members? Section 15. Section 16.
Section 16 provides Metropolitan Council, authorizes them to issue general obligation bonds or revenue bonds in anticipation of federal grants for transportation and transit projects payable from the grant collections. Section 17 provides authority for cities and counties to issue general obligation or revenue bonds in anticipation of federal grants, the same thing. These are generally called GARVEYs. Grant anticipation revenue vehicles, but it authorizes cities and counties to issue general obligation or revenue bonds in anticipation of federal grants for transportation or transit project. If you're going to issue revenue bonds, the estimated annual grant collections must equal at least 150% of the maximum annual debt service on the bonds. If you're going to issue general obligations, the estimated annual grant collections must equal at least 110% of the maximum annual debt service on the bonds. Bond proceeds would be used to pay or reimburse the costs of transportation or transit projects relating to the grants, pay costs of issuance, pay interest on the obligations for a period not exceeding 3 years from their date of issue, and if you're issuing revenue bonds, to fund a debt service reserve fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is a transportation-related one. Do we ever bond in anticipation in transportation? We currently do that? Even though there's so many times that the federal money isn't forthcoming, even after we expect it, do we do that?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what we did a few years ago, and that's exactly what happened to
money didn't come.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Section 16 and 17, is the committee comfortable with taking them out?
Yeah.
Senator Johnson moves delete Section 16 and 17. I think Senator Murphy probably would like to see our bill if we put that in here. On the Johnson motion to delete section 16 and 17, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Section 18.
Section 18 we've addressed briefly. Again, it's a technical amendment to make it clear bonds can be issued to reimburse for the cost of street reconstruction when it's done in anticipation of financing. In addition, it permits the approval of such bonds by a unanimous vote of only those members of the governing body present at the meeting, instead of requiring full attendance at a meeting in order to issue such bonds and unanimous consent of the full council.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
There's something about that seems to me like a city council could skew a vote.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the president at the meeting, that's a significant change. It's always been thought to be a majority of the full body.
Still
majority.
Well, but if now it would be unanimous of everybody who's there versus unanimous.
It's important. You would think we could get the whole governing body there. Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, I think the unanimous vote of our members means you have one person, whatever, you'd have a problem. It seems there's a difference, there's a halfway point, though, between unanimous of all members and majority of those who show up. I mean, either a super majority of those present or
a unanimous
majority of the entire board.
It's still required to be unanimous for everybody who's present.
Well, unanimous for those
it's
present.
It's unanimous right. For people
it
who are present.
Mr.
Forum.
Chair, right. We're elected to be at
Senator
these
Johnson.
Tables. City council, county, state. I think this would really make a president.
Senator Johnson, if I could. I think there are situations, as I understand it, where you're on a timetable for street reconstruction bonds, and perhaps it's not that huge a project, and perhaps you've got a council member that's on vacation at the March meeting. I mean, I just think that all we intended was to try to solve a problem where maybe you have a council member that's not sick. We weren't trying to work around, a unanimous presence.
Senator Dibble.
Just to clarify, so I wasn't reading unanimous into this, but that's the understanding at this point. Law says that the vote has to be unanimous. I was just reading all as in, I was reading the word vote differently from the word all.
A vote of all of the members.
I was assuming the vote could be a prevailing vote by majority vote.
Not currently.
Senator Marty.
But people out of.
Kind of having the same trouble Senator Dibble was. It looks to me like it was every member had to vote in the past. Now every member who's present has to vote and it has to pass by a majority, but it's not the way anybody's interpreted it.
Senator Baca and Senator Marty, we spent a lot of time on this maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and in part to make you all comfortable with even doing street reconstruction. That was how we came to the unanimous vote requirement. So I guess in our industry, maybe it's poorly written, but we always have believed that it requires a unanimous vote.
Senator Pogmeier.
Chairman, this is like the consent calendar, and what the change is that we don't force 67 votes on the consent calendar. We only who's ever there?
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogamu, I agree. I think this is reasonable if it has to be unanimous vote of all those present. I just didn't read the wording the same way that council and everybody else seems to read it. Maybe it could be a little clearer. But.
Dibble, is it okay?
Yes. I was going to suggest a change, but it's fine. Well, I think, Mr. Chair, in typical bonds, at least I know I'm familiar with the City of Minneapolis, it requires a two-thirds threshold of all the members. It doesn't require a unanimous vote. It requires a two-thirds threshold of the entire body. So even if nine were there, all nine could vote for a bond issue, and that would be fine. So it could be, two-thirds threshold of all members of the body. That way someone could be gone. They could still accomplish their means, but it would be a higher threshold than a simple majority vote. Does that make sense? I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, though.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, if that really is unanimous of those present, that strikes me as reasonable the way it is, because that's going to be two-thirds of the body anyway.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pogelmaier.
I'd move that these provisions all be incorporated, the ones that we didn't take out.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
What if it's June and everyone's fishing?
No quorum.
There won't be a quorum.
On the Pogelmaier motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Chair moves that Senate file 1933 be laid on the table as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Members, tomorrow we are going to give our staff some time to work on the bill. Sometime in Wednesday afternoon. Barring computer problems here, they tell me we should be able to have it available for everybody. So the intent would be sometime Wednesday afternoon to get the bill out on the table here, and then Thursday morning mark it up and send it to the Senate floor. So we will meet again at the call of the chair sometime Wednesday afternoon. This meeting's adjourned.